never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the KSL Greenhouse. Isn't everything better when the sun shines? Thanks for joining us on taking a break from all the hard news and talking about gardening this morning. Maria Chalaos, Tom Bettis with you this morning. And you need to get your calls, your text questions in early because we have a shortened show making way for our special coverage of the 190th General Conference of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So the Greenhouse will be here for you until 9:30 today. So get your calls in early, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. And good morning, Ton. We continue our social distancing. It's very strange not to see your smiling face on a Saturday morning.
It is very strange. I thought we need to set up some sort of Skype or something to see each other.
I think it would be a great idea.
Yeah. I when you said that it was going to be sunny, I had to turn around and look out my window, and sure enough, that sun's coming up, so that's great.
Hey, it's gorgeous, and the high today in the mid-60s, that's definitely gardening weather.
It sure is. I have been watching, even with the COVID-19 stuff, which I really don't want to discuss that much.
Don't mention
I won't. The virus that must not be mentioned. We'll just call
exactly
it Voldemort.
That's exactly right.
So, yeah, as I've driven past garden centers, and I know business is down a bit, but there have been people there. The parking lots are relatively full. And so it looks like, you know, hopefully we're being careful, but life, at least gardening wise, is moving on.
Well, you know, gardening centers are considered, I believe, essential because they do provide things to help you provide food for your family. So I believe that as long as you keep your social distance, the gardening centers will stay open.
I hope so. I've heard, well, I had a long conversation with Brian Lloyd yesterday from Olson's.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded a couple of podcasts that we'll get up over the next week or so. But when I talked to Brian, he said that there are some states that have started closing garden centers to try to prevent spread. And he was worried because, you know, they ship all over the Western United States. And hopefully that doesn't happen because, you know, those gardens and things, especially if we get to a point that, you know, so many people are locked down, we may have, you know, we're not going to starve, but it may be a little harder to find some vegetables and things. And if you can grow your own, it would sure be nice.
Well, it is true. If we continue our social distancing, we wear cloth masks and we can, like, resolve this issue more quickly. So let's all behave and try to do that. This morning, you wanted to talk about creeping phlox, one of my favorites, but it's just so short-lived. But let's talk about creeping phlox and how pretty it is this time of year, this great perennial.
And that's why I put it down as the wanted to do it as the plant of the week, because when it is in bloom, nothing is prettier. And it's a ground cover type perennial, and it blooms usually from the first week of April into early May, and then it starts to peter out a little bit. But when it is in bloom, it's just a solid mass of pink or lavender, sometimes white. There's candy-striped varieties that are, you know, bicolor white and pink. There's several varieties, but when it is in bloom, it just can't be beat.
But it's, you know, it's pretty when it's just green as well. And I know that I have, you know, quite a few of these in my yard because when I, of course, planned my yard originally, these are gorgeous in the garden centers in the spring. So everyone wants to plant these.
They do. And I would caution people about that because they are beautiful. The problem is when they're done, they can actually look a little bit forlorn or ratty, depending on which word you want to use. And so for that month or so of show that you get in the spring, the rest of the year, they really need to be in the background. And so if you were planting phlox, some things I would recommend is to not go in all, don't go all in and just do ground cover phlox, but I would do patches of it and then plant other things. You know, Larry Sagers used to talk about your perennial garden being a fireworks show, to where you have bursts of color over a longer period of time. And so creeping phlox can be an important part of that, but they shouldn't be the only thing.
Right. You really do need to plant other perennials around them. Kind of spread them out.
I remember there was a home along Gentile Street in Layton going up toward the mountain anyway. It was a beautiful home, rock work everywhere. Someone had put a lot of time and money into it. And in the spring, they had exclusively planted phlox in the entire yard. And for about a month, it was just a showpiece. I mean, it was more colorful than Disneyland. But after that, it was still pretty, but it was just kind of, okay, let's move on.
Right.
And that's what I wish I still had pictures of it, because that was a prime example of why you spread your perennials out and by species and when they bloom.
Right. And again, make sure you plant a lot of other perennials around these, and then you'll be okay. You know, I made the same mistake in my rose bed. I have planted phlox along the edge, and I need to spread those out. I need to put other perennials in between. I think you're correct about that. We are starting out. We need to tell folks that whenever we do the plant of the week, it's up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. So go and check out that great article. And let's get right to our callers this morning. I'm afraid with only an hour and a half, we're not going to get in as many questions as we'd like to. So let's take our first call from Susie in Orem. Good morning, Susie.
Hi.
What is your question?
Hi, we have three peony bushes. We have two on the south of our home, one on the north. They're beautiful bushes. They grow very well every year. After they bloom, they get a terrible case of powdery mildew. It gets to be so bad that we eventually have to cut them off because it's just so unsightly and just looks terrible. They're well-drained. They have a lot of sun. We're just wondering what causes that and how we can prevent that this year.
How late in the year are you having to cut them back?
Usually, when do we cut them down now? In July or August, you know, after they bloom, they just start getting that powdery mildew.
Okay. Go ahead.
It just covers the plants everywhere, and it just looks...
Okay. Good. Yeah, and there are many peony varieties are susceptible to powdery mildew. Powdery mildew is a fungal disease that is airborne, and so even if you clean up the plant debris in the fall, because more spores will drift in, there's not much you can do as far as trying to prevent the plants from getting it from the get-go. But some things you might look at is that powdery mildew isn't present, or at least it's at greatly reduced amounts in the spring and early summer. And you may consider trying to use something like maybe like a neem oil in the evening to see if you can prevent it for a longer period of time, that you would use neem once a week, or maybe another fungicide like liquid F-stop. The goal here is sometime in June to early July, before it really gets going, to see if you can give those plants another couple of weeks, maybe, you know, a month at the most. They still are going to get powdery mildew, but if you can keep them green a little longer, they'll collect more energy. And if you cut them back sometime in September, it's not nearly as damaging as if you have to do it in late July.
Okay.
I mean, the only other thing you could do, if you don't want to spend, you know, the $15 or $20 a year on fungicide, is to take them out and then plant something else that isn't that susceptible.
Okay. All right. They're gorgeous. We love them. They're beautiful. They bloom every year, but they just have that such a terrible problem. So We'll try that this year and see what happens.
All right, Susie, good luck to you.
All right. Thank you so much.
The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Also taking your text questions, and they're starting to come in at 57500. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for joining us for The Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you, taking your questions this morning. Ton, first texter, is saying they have an Autumn Blaze maple. They are in Woods Cross, by the way. It's about 10 years old. Last couple of years, they've had iron chlorosis, and they've done a lot of things to really try and treat this. In April and May, they have done one-inch holes every 5 to 12 feet around the drip line with the powder, poured in and watered it well. They still have the chlorosis, and it's bad. They've even sprayed on the leaves with no results, and they're wondering if they could be missing other micronutrients like magnesium.
They definitely could be. Iron is the most common element that when we see the light yellow leaves and dark green veins that plants are deficient in, but it's also common to have magnesium and manganese deficiencies that look very similar. So some things they could look at doing are applying some micronutrients in addition to the chelated iron. Then I would consider maybe doing some granular sulfur under the drip line, and I might grab a bag of humate and apply it under the tree, because as the humate breaks down, it also forms a weak acid, humic acid, and also formic acid that will temporarily free up some of those micros. But I think it's going to be imperative that if the iron hasn't worked, that they try some supplemental zinc, manganese, and magnesium to see if that will help just in the small amounts. Sometimes it does, but every once in a while you just get a tree that no amount of applied micronutrients or iron are going to bring it out. And there's some fungal diseases that will cause nutrient deficiencies. And because there's a fungal disease, the tree just never comes out of it.
They're wondering how well those drill-in plugs work.
I would prefer that they use a $20 a pound chelated iron. That's the only form of iron that stays soluble in our soils, EDDHA, so Miller Farrah Plus. And any time you're putting a plug into the ground, only the roots right near that plug have access, and it greatly limits the amount of nutrients that the tree can actually uptake. And so I really prefer that nutrients be applied to the ground in either granular or liquid form and not just plugs here and there.
So would a soil test help them?
Probably. It would tell them that if their soil is salty or something, but I think it's going to be imperative they switch up the kind of iron and apply it in liquid, and we can cover this after the break on how to do it, but I suspect that the plugs aren't doing them much good.
All right. And you're listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. A break for the news.